Hello everyone, and welcome to JTalk Extra Time. I'm James Taylor, and joining me for part three of our J2 season reviews, once again, is John Steele. All right, John, how are you?
Hi, James. All good, thanks. Yeah, back and banging, we could say.
Speaking of banging, we've got some guests on board to help us again with this episode. So we're looking forward to their contributions a little bit later. But first, we need to talk about 16th place Renofa Yamaguchi, who had 50 points. They had 13 wins, 11 draws, 18 losses. I thought that was this was a pretty good season for Yamaguchi. But what about you, John?
Yeah, I think it was quietly impressive, wasn't it? I don't think they really flirted with relegation in any real meaningful way this year. And I think that has to go down as a success when you think about the size and the sort of J-League history of the club. You mentioned they had 50 points in total. That's a full 13 points clear of the relegation zone. That has to go down as a successful season, I think. And they also improved a lot from 2021. I think in 2021, well, they actually finished 15th the season before, but they only had 43 points. So they squeezed an extra 7 points out of the squad. And I think we do sort of have to tip our hats to the coach, Yoshihiro Natsuka, who with quite a thin squad, even if the first 11 was okay. I don't think that they were perhaps a bit short of bodies or quality, you know, in the squad as a whole. I'm quite surprised. I think he's already renewed his contract, hasn't he, for next season at Yamaguchi. I thought he might be off to perhaps greener or more better resourced pastures for 2023. I think if he can do something similar with Yamaguchi next season, so, you know, comfortable lower mid-table safety, I think that will probably be enough to attract the attention of a bigger fish or two in J2 terms. So yeah, I think for Yamaguchi, I don't know if there was anything too exciting or too spectacular that we can draw on. I suppose Takaya Numata, the kind of live wire younger striker, was a highlight. But I think for a club like Yamaguchi to sort of quietly and effectively sort of stroll into 16th place with no relegation trouble, that has to go down as a very satisfying season for them. I don't know if you'd agree.
Yeah, I would agree. I think they, like I said, they improved their points from last year, which is obviously a good thing. And they were pretty steady in sort of like 18th-ish for most of the year. And then when it mattered, they had a really good run of results to secure safety, and had a 3-3 draw against Yokohama FC, and then 1-0 win over Machida, 1-1 against Kanazawa, a 1-0 win over the UQ, a 6-1 win against Gunma, and then 2-2 draw with Iwate from match days 33-39. That's a really good run of results against teams that could potentially have overhauled them, and one team that was flying high. So I think, yeah, they should be very pleased with that, and I think it shows the positive approach that they had. I liked the way they played because they were quite aggressive in the way they would pressure the opposition, and it shows again in the results because they were never really blown away by any opponents. They also had quite a good habit of scoring soon after they'd conceded, so they were quick to get back into games, and they did actually manage 3 wins and 4 draws after conceding the first goal. So they were pretty solid, I think. And yeah, they had the excellent performances from Numata, who was in his first year as a pro. They also they got Kazuma Takai mid-season, who had 7 goals, which was good. They also mid-season they got Takayuki Mae back from Matsumoto, which helped, I think, in the run-in. And in goal, Kentaro Seki was solid again. He's been good for the last couple of years. Quite understated because Yamaguchi don't get much attention from anyone, but he's been really good for them for the last couple of years. So I'd say, yeah, very impressive first year from Natsuka as a manager. And it'll be interesting to see what he can do with probably similarly limited resources next year as well.
Well, I believe that they've already lost Takai and Numata, haven't they? So he will have to do some rebuilding in the winter break. So, yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, I think that's life for a lot of a lot of J2 managers, isn't it?
Well, that's the real skill, is being able to sort of regen the team every year, isn't it? Like a sort of football manager in real life, yeah.
Yeah, like Akiba at Mito did. We're looking for the next Akiba, aren't we?
Always.
Okay. Yeah. Let's move on then. Next, 17th place, Tochigi SC. They're a point back from Yamaguchi. They had 49 points. And joining us to talk about Tochigi's season is Matt Bruce, at Matthew D. Bruce on Twitter.
Hi there. Thanks for having me on and giving me the dubious honour of talking about Tochigi SC. They're not always the most glamorous side, and they're not always an enjoyable watch, it has to be said. But I think this season has kind of represented a little bit of an improvement for them compared to where they were before. I think if you're Tochigi SC, you come into any given season with the expectation or the aim of avoiding relegation, and that's about it. As long as they can stay in the division, that kind of represents some sort of success, I think, for Tochigi. And you have to say, this season, 17th place, 12 points clear of the drop zone. That represents success on that front, I think, for Tochigi. They kind of recovered from a bit of a rocky start. There was a little bit of, you know, concern going around the ground in the kind of the early stages of the season. But in the end, I think they were comfortable, stayed up comfortably. And I think you have to give some credit to the manager, Tokisaki Yu. He came in at the start of last season. He took over a side that had been, to put it bluntly, they were a bit of an anti-football side. I think the previous seasons, the general tactic for Tochigi seemed to be hope to somehow snatch a goal from somewhere and then shut up shop, just try and stop the other team from playing football, try to prevent a game from breaking out. Tokisaki has kind of not revolutionised that side, but he's overseen some a kind of slight sort of evolution of those tactics. They're certainly more kind of dynamic this season. They kind of have attempted to play more of a pressing game and kind of really take the game a little bit more to their opponents. Not always successfully, but successfully enough. And I think, you know, there's been a few kind of key additions that he made which kind of really helped him do that. And I think the player that most impressed me this season was Carlos Gutierrez, the Spanish centre-back who came in from Vizpa Fukuoka at the start of last season. He's a very kind of combative, aggressive player. And I've always felt, maybe this is because I've spent far too much of my life watching non-league football in England, but I've always felt that a lot of teams in the J-League would really benefit from having a kind of a more kind of physical, aggressive player. There seems to be a bit of a dearth of that in the J-League, and those are kind of some qualities that Gutierrez has really brought to the Tochigi team, and it's really given them a kind of a solid base to go out and attack teams, as well as kind of giving them kind of confidence in their own defensive abilities. And I think this playing this kind of more high energy, kind of active style this season has kind of really kind of gave them the ability and the confidence to go and kind of match up against some of the stronger sides this season. You know, you don't really anticipate Tochigi taking many points off the teams at the top of the table, but I think this season they did that, and they took a few teams by surprise. You know, they ended up unbeaten in both games against Yokohama, for example, unbeaten against Tokushima. They actually beat them away from home as well. They took a point away from Okayama. These are the kind of games that you don't expect Tochigi to win. And if, you know, if they drop points elsewhere, that's what they do. But they for them to pick up points when you don't expect it has been a new experience, I think. And of course that kind of played out in its kind of most clearest form in the Emperor's Cup. I think that this kind of they knocked out Yokohama F. Mariners in that, you know, who obviously went on and won J1 league, and that was completely out of the blue. Of course, you know, Yokohama made a few changes to their side and things like that, but for Tochigi to go into that game so positively and really took the game to them, you know, I don't want to say they outplayed Yokohama, because they did ride their luck at times, but they were really positive. They kind of really played in this very, I say, this very positive kind of attacking way that I'm not used to seeing from Tochigi, and it paid off. And I think they showed that they're kind of capable of going toe to toe with better sides. And even in the next game in that round in that competition, and they went out eventually at the hands of Kyoto Sanga, another J1 side. But Tochigi were the better side in that game throughout the course of it, and really pushed them all the way. Only ended up losing it to a stoppage time last second sickening goal, and of course people were really disappointed by that, but it was a really great kind of cup run, and I think that was the highlight of the season for me. Was seeing Tochigi play in that way against that quality of opposition is not something we've become accustomed to, but ultimately that, what cost them in that Kyoto game was just switching off right at the end of the game. And I think that became a bit of a pattern over the course of the season. They dropped so many points late on. We're talking past 80 minutes into stoppage time. Looking at it cost them a lot of points. They went down. They were 2-1 up against their local rivals, Mito Hollyhock, and then conceded 87th minute, 96th minute goals to lose that game. Same thing in their against their other local rivals, Gunma. They were 1-0 up in that game, had absolutely dominated, spurned all sorts of chances to really put that game to bed, and then conceded 97th minute penalty and ended up having to take a point. I think, this is something that happened several times over the course of the season, throwing away winning positions and dropping points at the very death. I think if they had been able to see these games out properly, then we probably wouldn't be talking about them in this edition of the podcast. We probably would have talked about them in sort of the previous part two. And I think we'd have had to have looked at Tochigi then as kind of a bit of a surprise package. But as it happens, they kind of reverted to type a little bit right at the end of games. So I think that's going to be the big task for the season ahead is to, because I think Tokisaki he's really built a strong base. They're definitely capable of kind of pushing on, I think, from here, this side. And I'm certainly interested to see where they go from here. But I think one of the first things that they need to address going into the new season next year is going to be just seeing out games, maintaining their concentration. I don't know if they need to improve their fitness or things, but they need to stop conceding so many soft goals in the latter stages of games. But if they can do that, they've shown that they're actually a capable side at this level. They've made sort of some better teams in this league quite uncomfortable at times, and that's not something we're used to. And they've got themselves a base to go on and push on. I don't think next season, if you're a sort of a side like Tochigi, I don't think you're going to be looking at sort of promotion or playoffs. I think it's probably out of their reach. But just an improvement on what they've done this season would be great. And as we've seen, this season just gone, they're capable of putting together a cup run. I'd love to see them do that again. Especially, look at what Corfu did earlier this season, and you can't help but dream about what might be possible for a club of a sort of a similar size in Tochigi. So yeah, I think they're in a good position, feeling positive about Tochigi, I think, for the first time in quite a long time, and I kind of look forward to see what they can do next season, really.
All right, that was Matt Bruce to talk about Tochigi's season. Thanks, Matt, for your thoughts. And John, we've got to talk about a quite surprising 18th place Vanvre Kofu, the Emperor's Cup winners, who were a point behind Tochigi of 48 points, 11 wins, 15 draws, 16 losses. What did you make of their league season?
It's interesting. Yes, I think we should preface any sort of any comments on Corfu by first mentioning that in 2021 they finished third with 80 points. So to follow that up 12 months later by finishing 18th with sort of 48 points, It's very hard to characterize that as anything other than, in my notes I've written, unmitigated disaster. however, as you've already alluded to, James, perhaps the disaster was slightly mitigated by the fact that and I'm still not sure how they've done this, they've won the Emperor's Cup, and congratulations to them for that. No mean feat, no mean achievement. And that means they're going to play Asian Champions League football in 2023. However, the fact that even this wasn't enough to save the coach Tatsuma Yoshida's job, I think that tells you everything you need to know about what the front office at Kofu thought of the J2 campaign in 2022. I think it was pretty horrible, and they just never really seemed to get going at all, did they? I think they were. I know a 42 game season has these, you know, twists and turns and ups and downs, but after being beaten 4-1 and sort of comprehensively outplayed at Okayama on day one, you know, match day one, they just never seemed to get into their stride. They never seemed to get going and recover from that throughout the rest of the season. I think in terms of players, I really liked Motoki Hasegawa. I know you picked him out when you were on the big pod for the kind of Emperor's Cup sort of final preview. He was clearly the standout player. I also liked Yoshiki Torikai, maybe more in the first half of the season than the second. And their squad is weird because there are plenty of good players. I mean, on their day, I think Nagi Matsumoto, I think Hidehiro Sugai, I think Kohei Kawata in goal, I think Juma Miyazaki, we know, it can be a live wire forward. But it just never happened for them in any kind of consistent basis. And 16 defeats is a lot for a team that finished third the season before. And I think we had some sort of internal debate, or maybe even made it onto one of our sort of regular season pods, about whether winning the Emperor's Cup would save Tatsumi Yoshida's job. And I think they put paid to that by announcing, I think it was on the Monday, wasn't it? Less than 24 hours after the final, that they announced that he was leaving. So, I don't think it is a weirder thing to say, but apart from winning the Emperor's Cup, there weren't really any positives. And avoiding relegation, there weren't that many positives to come. It was a very weird season. It really depends how much you love the Emperor's Cup as to whether it was a good season or not, I think. But James, can you make any more sense of it than I can? I'm still scratching my head a little bit here.
No. I wonder if the club had decided before the cup final that this season, regardless of the cup run, the league form had been so bad that it was not possible for Yoshida to keep his job. Winning the cup is great and everything, but at that, while they were going through the cup, reaching the final, they were 10 games winless in the league, 3 draws followed by 7 losses. So I think they must have decided that however the cup final goes, right, you're not going to be here next year, kind of thing.
Perhaps they decided in like June.
Well, they were all right in the first half of the year, I thought. Corfu, they kind of had a spell between 10th and 7th. There's some impressive performances from the likes of Hasegawa, who you mentioned. And yeah, Torikai was pretty good. Shaw Araki, I think, did quite well out on the left as well. But yeah, they're just... And when they outshot their opponents in 24 of their games, which is the third most in the league, but they still managed to lose 16 matches. So, what were they doing? I don't understand. You know, that's such an incredible drop from the previous year. And even, you know, they got goals from William Lira and Hasegawa and Torikai and Miyazaki and Matsumoto that you mentioned. And Kazushi Mitsuhira got 7 goals, including 4 in the final 15 minutes and additional time of games. So he was good value as a late sub. But why were they so bad? I don't know why they were so bad. We talked about it on Big Pod. We talked about it on this pod as well. Just... there doesn't seem to be any explanation, unless it's the manager.
Well, just based on the players that we've reeled off there, and we should give a nod to Kazushi Mitsuhira's incredible sort of afro, which is in danger of getting its own squad number if it gets any any bigger. It might be getting goal, you know, it might be getting his goal bonuses if he scores a header because it's so so impressive. But you know, that squad of players, a bad season for Kofu with that squad should mean finishing about 10th or 12th, I feel. So for them to have ended up in the sort of bottom quarter of the table, that is an abject failure, I think. And unfortunately, the way football works is you underperform to that degree, and the manager's always going to be always going to find the hot seat uncomfortably warm.
Yeah, and it is a shame that amazing cup run was, you know, followed by or bookended by this terrible league season. But perhaps also this terrible league season helped to make that cup run even more amazing than it already was, with all those wins over J1 teams. But yeah, the fact of the matter is this was a really bad league season for Kofu, and I don't really have anything else to say apart from it was bad. So I think we should move on to the next team, because I think it will be much more interesting for the listeners, because 19th was Urmia Ardija. There's always a lot to say about Urmia Ardija. They finished 5 points back from Kofu, and you, I understand, chatted to Steve Fryer about Urmia.
Hi everyone, John Steele here, and I'm joined to discuss Urmia Ardija by a friend of the pod, Steve Fryer, at Ardija01Talk on Twitter. Steve, how's it going?
Very good, John. How are you?
Yeah, all right, thanks. Yeah, I've enjoyed the lengthy chat we've had before recording, Steve. Obviously, the listener's not privy to that, but it was all good stuff. Yeah, nice to talk to you again in Podland. It's been a while.
Definitely. Nice to catch up.
Yes, okay. So the pleasantries are out of the way, Steve. We better get down to the miserable bit, I'm afraid. So, Urmia's season, you know, they ended up finishing 19th this time, didn't they? 10 wins. 13 draws and 19 losses, 43 points collected from the 42 matches. I can't work out if it was better or worse than 2021. I think in 2021 they finished 16th. That's obviously higher up the league, but they only had 42 points somehow. So I guess we can do a glass half full or half empty on that one. So Steve, we better get you. You know, we want your expert kind of insight. So how did you feel the season went overall?
Well, I think it's no surprise to you or your listeners that it was a disappointment, and it didn't go very well. And we spent most of the league, we spent all of the league in that bottom area, really. After the first few games where everyone's getting their early points in, we spent most of the season, you know, 18th, 19th, 20th or 20th in that area. And that's just hugely disappointing for Urmia fans. It's not saying that we're a big club, or I mean, I know, you know, we've been in J1 for 10 years. I mean, no, that's not what I'm saying. I mean, that's, we have to earn that. But it was very disappointing. We never got going, really. We changed manager. We had two different styles of play. You know, you mentioned comparing 2021 to 2022. Well, of course, Shimoda came in 2021 and rescued us. But then, you know, he didn't improve us in the winter break, and the defenders, the players that he brought in, that didn't work. And we just, you know, we were very flat, very just poor, I think. What you thought?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it wasn't so much flirting with relegation as kind of a heavy petting, wasn't it, for most of the season? Yeah. Well, you touched on the managers already, Steve, but how about players? I mean, obviously, in the end, Urmia did survive. They did stay up. Who was the most important player, do you think, over the 42 games?
Yeah, this is such a difficult question. I mean, I don't think there's a best player for me this season. I'd be interested to know what other viewers of Urmia and other fans of Urmia would say to this one. Again, to compare last year, I thought Kojima was our rock-solid player who was so important at keeping the team together. But this season, he didn't even have that good a run in the team. I struggle to find a best player this year. I've got a few names. I mean, I would actually start with the goalkeeper because we had terrible trouble having a fit goalkeeper in the beginning of the season. And we lost, you know, Minami and Ueda. And then they brought in this guy, Ko Shimura, you know, who had never heard of, who, you know, according to his record, had been over 6 years at Jubilo, only played 17 games. You know, he'd been on loan the previous season at Giravants and only played twice. And he was coming in to be our main goalkeeper because our number three and four goalkeepers were, you know, very young and inexperienced. And he actually played very well. And he came in and he made saves and he brought a bit of confidence to the side. Obviously, our goals conceded is not good. But I mean, I didn't expect anything from him. When I looked at his statistics, I was very, very worried because we were at that point heading in one direction.
Yeah, well, I suppose if he hadn't worked out, I think they were down to perhaps like the kit man or the tea lady, weren't they? Exactly. Next to be handed the gloves.
18-year-old, 19-year-old guys who are hopefully the future. I mean, one of them did play once and did okay, but so I would say he was an important player. Then I would say, and you know, to touch on the manager, which is a question coming. Soma brought in Hakamata and Okaniwa into the defence, into the club and into the defence. And that made, again, I know our defence wasn't that good, but it did give our defence shape. It gave our defence a bit of strength that even though when we were conceding, we were able to only to still hold on to the game or get point, get draws or even get wins. And both Hakamata and Okaniwa were quite attacking and, for defenders that can attack and get goals. I mean, Hakamata is a central defender, but is quite handy in the opposition's penalty box. And Okaniwa was very good down the right wing and helping us go from defence into attack. So I would add those two as being important players. And then the only other two I can really think to say is Shibayama did improve. He's a young player. He's a wing player. He kind of, you know, you'd hope he'd be he's our Mitoma, if you like, but our coach plays him from the start. And the other, he developed quite well, and I hope he's going to go on to develop in the future, in next season. And Masahito Ono on the other wing back, I thought he played very well. But that's really it. My favourite player to watch would be Kawata, but he didn't play that much. He was used as a substitute. So those would be my key players: Shimura, the goalkeeper, Hakamata and Okaniwa, the new defenders, and Shibayama and Ono.
No, I think that's fair enough. I think you're right to pick out Shimura. I think it bears repeating. Oftentimes, the sort of central defensive cover in front of him was poor to non-existent. So I think he saved a lot of points with his performances when he came into the team. I also think I really like Masato Kojima as well because he's always looking to work the ball forward. He's always looking for a forward pass, a vertical pass to kind of build the attack. But yeah, it wasn't a vintage season for him or many Omiya midfielders. It wasn't a good year all round for Omiya. I think in the middle of the park, was it? Weird season. But I think even in a season where there's a lot of problems, there are always one or two players that stand out.
And I think one thing to say is, and I think you'll appreciate this because I remember you mentioning this chap's name on the pod quite a few times, is one good thing about Hakamata coming in as central defender was that, you know, this meant that Nishimura, he was never seen again. Once Soma came in, he was only seen for about one game and Soma then just didn't pick him. He just never played again. And that's a really good thing. It's nothing against Nishimura. He he's got some skills, but he's just... He just makes too many mistakes.
Yeah, I think he did not have a good campaign. I think he's definitely one of the players who exasperated me the most as a neutral, just sort of watching on this season. So yeah, maybe he'll come back stronger next year. We'll wait and see. Yeah, okay, all fair enough, Steve. I'm a bit trepidatious about asking this next question, considering the way that the season went. But was there a kind of nadir for you, like a biggest disappointment this season? And if so, where was that?
I think for me, the biggest disappointment was that Shimoda didn't work out. I did think that he was trying to change the way that we were playing football. You know, Omir has usually been, for the years that I've been following them, 4-4-2. And, you know, Shimoda brought in different formations. I mean, mostly a 4-3-3, but it meant that we were trying to play with the ball. Unfortunately, it didn't really work out for him, as we know. And, you know, when Soma came back in, you know, it was just disappointing that that hadn't worked out for Shimoda, and that Soma brought in 4-4-2 again. Now, it was practical and it kept us in J2, which is very important, of course, because we were definitely heading to J3, in my opinion, under Shimoda. But, you know, that was just a bit different. You know, I would love to see an Omiya side play with the ball and keep possession more and move and pass and play amongst themselves more. And I thought that we might be going that way with Shimoda, but it didn't work out for him. So that would be my biggest disappointment. Perhaps my biggest surprise, if you're going to ask me, was that we didn't get relegated.
Yeah, always good to have some positivity. I thought Omiya were dicing with real danger for much of the season. So yeah, we have to put that down as a positive that they survived in the end. So keeping things light and frothy and positive, Steve, did you have a personal best game or even a result from this season that sticks in the mind?
I think there were a few, only a few, but. Actually, of course, I can mention the game that I came onto the podcast last season and talked to James about. That would be an obvious one. I think it was a key game when we beat Yokohama, who obviously got promoted, as we all know. We beat Yokohama, and and that was not expected, even at home. They had just gone on a run and were playing very well. But what I'm going to choose as my best game is the next game, because we backed it up. You know, one of the few times this season that we actually had a result, had a performance, and then backed it up and did it again. Again, of course, we're letting in goals, but, you know, we went away to Sendai. I, you know, if you could check the results even back in J1, away at Sendai, we often lost. You know, it's not an easy place to go, even when they're a J2 side. And at that point, they were still, you know, they were still very much in the equation at that point for promotion. And we went away, and the first half performance was probably the best 45 minutes Omir played all season. And then we were at half time away to Sendai, who was second or third in the league, and we were 3-0 up. We were 20th or 21st or something like that. And it was a shock. I could have put that in the surprise answer, actually, the answer for what's your biggest surprise. And it was a good team performance. We were passing the ball. We were moving. We were stretching their defence. We didn't continue it so much in the second half, but we held on. You know, they scored two goals. One of them was late. And we managed to hold out and get the 3 points. And I'm sure the 6 points over those two games were very crucial, because I rather think we were 6 points ahead of the team below us, or the team who got relegated. So, I would put that as my best game in a season where there are not many best games.
Yeah, no, fair enough. I think that's a perfectly understandable choice. We could probably put down as like that best week, right? Those two games coming back to back. Yeah, I was behind the goal with the Yokohama FC fans at that game, the Omiya Yokohama game. And yeah, I can confirm it was a pulsating match, even though it didn't go the way that the fans around me and my son were hoping. So yeah, that was an absolutely brilliant J2, you know, classic kind of topsy-turvy.
I think those two games back to back were for us were classics. even for the neutrals watching. But also they were key. They gave Omir a belief that A, they could score goals and they could play better and they could beat teams even if they conceded. And you know, we needed points at that point. We needed points all season, but you know, we were definitely in there. That was a turning point, I feel.
Yeah. What I liked about Omiya in both of those games as well is, like you mentioned, they Omiya were often in this position of having to win the game more than once in the same game, which, you know, against Yokohama City, because they got pegged back, and then Sendai, you know, 3-0 up and cruising. But Omiya are not the kind of team to cruise to 3-0 away wins, are they? They let Sendai back into it, and it made it exciting, but also probably quite stressful on the old heart rate monitor there for the managers. But yeah, okay. Steve, you mentioned both of Omiya's managers from this season already. Masahiro Shimoda was in charge at the start of the season, and he made way for Naoki Soma later on when things started to go wrong. But any overall thoughts on the two managers, if you want to maybe compare and contrast them a little bit, or you know, any comments?
But as I said, I think you know Shimoda tried to play the right kind of football, in my opinion. You know, others may disagree, Sam Allardyce or someone. But I think he tried to play the right football, but he didn't bring in the right players. He needed to change the defence over the break between the 21 season and the 22 season. And it took the players that he brought in, Motegi and especially Motegi and Shimazato, it took them longer to settle into the defence, and Shimazato next to Nishimura just didn't work. And that was a real big problem for us. And eventually, that affected the creative players that were playing upfield, and the team just fell apart really and went on a downward spiral. So, and he didn't know how to stop it. Now, you know. I mean, I never talked to the coach, so I don't know. But I presume he would argue that he didn't have the money to get the right players, or he couldn't attract the right players to come to Omiya. But we were lacking certainly up front. I mean, we only had Tomiyama. He didn't solve the goal scoring problem that we have. So overall, disappointing. There was some hope there for me in Shimoda, but overall disappointing. And I think it was the right decision to fire him. And Naoki Soma, well, of course, you've got to give him bonus points at the moment, as we did have to do with Shimoda last season. He's kept us in the league. So, you know, that's a good thing. The football is much more pragmatic compared to Shimoda. We're back to 4-4-2, as I mentioned earlier, which I'm not happy about, but it was practical. It kept us in the league. It gave us shape. It gave us a style of play that he could get the players working to. Whereas we were at sixes and sevens under Shimoda, it just wasn't working. So it was practical, but I wish we could do something different, a bit more attractive football. But and the key thing, as I said earlier, with Mike, when in answer to the key players, he brought in Hakamata on Okaniwa, and the defence started functioning, and and we started to win games, we started to draw games, and and that was just a vast improvement on what happened before. So you know. Overall, it's not a good picture for me. And manager-wise, it hasn't been a good picture for me for a long time. You know, you could go back to Takuya Takagi. I do not want to go back to Takuya Takagi, thank you. Kenny Wase, of course, came in. Probably anyone doesn't even remember him. And that was a huge experiment that went badly wrong. And I have to give... You know, we have to see what happens in the new season. We're staying with Soma. That's, you know, he's earned that right by keeping us in the league. I presume, you know, we'll come on to talk about next season. But
yeah, well let's do that now. Just pausing briefly to note that I'd completely forgotten about Ken, the perma startled Ken Iwase. I'd forgotten about him already. Yes, good blast from the past there. Yeah, I think manager wise, it was a weird season. I think I remember, was it this season where Shimoda made those comments about not having any foreign players because of the communication problems and the Japanese? That was a that, considering some of the sort of defending that the sort of Japanese four man backline or three man backline produced early on in the season, it's turned out to be a pretty unfortunate comment. Although I'm not sure if he really meant it or if I understood it, what he meant correctly. But
no, I mean, that's a good point. That obviously. I wasn't happy to hear that. There could be mistranslation. Even the journalists could have reported it in Japanese wrongly about what he was intending to say or what was behind it. Possibly on the Corona side, there was a point. But on the other, he didn't need to say the other point about that they're more difficult to handle or language problems and cultural problems. He didn't need to bring that into it anyway. There need not be any worry in the J League, but certainly not in J2 about too many foreign players. I mean, most of the J2 teams that I see that come to NAC 5, 80% of the team is definitely Japanese. And those extra foreign players just give something different, and they're both players can learn from each other. It isn't a one-way journey. I mean, Japanese players improve by playing with the players from other countries and vice versa. I mean, look at the Japan national team now. They all play overseas and they're all benefiting from that and learning from that. And I think, and of course, I was happy to comment on Twitter at times when, we would lose to a team who had two or three very good players from overseas. And we ruled ourselves out of that.
Yeah, not speaking Japanese didn't do Jose Aurelio Suarez any harm in goal at Tokushima, for example. Yeah, it seemed like a strange... That was one of the first comments that I read this season where I thought, that sounds like a bit of an odd... If it's other clubs, I think Akita would be an example where it's like perhaps they want to bring in foreign players, but the budget means they can't, for example. Whereas Omi, I don't think that's the case, but it was a weird angle to go down.
Exactly. And then the club made various in-house changes and made a public statement that we were still going to finish in the top six, even though we were right in the bottom two, which most fans just saw that.
Yeah, what I've got visions of Malcolm Tucker from the thick of it, screaming into his cell phone with that. But Well, Steve, you started to kind of allude to it already, but Naoki Soma is going to be the man in the hot seat in the technical area, at least for the start of next season, as far as we know. So what are your hopes and dreams for Omiya in 2023?
Yeah, and my fears. obviously, my hopes are that we have a better season. I could say to you, I hope we get promoted. I mean, I don't know if that's possible. My hope is that we are not in that bottom six at all or all season. My hope is that we develop to become a mid-table and then go on to challenge maybe in further seasons at the end where we really want to be at the end of the table, at the top of the table. So my hope is that we can develop to be a mid-table team. That's my first hope. Because it is possible in J2. We've seen with Kumamoto, they came from J3 and then were right at the top of J2. And almost got to J1. These things are possible to suddenly and rapidly change. But my minimum hope is that we become a mid-table, a Mito Hollyhock or something. And the second hope is that we play better football, and we play more possession football, and we're nicer to watch. The third hope is that we have a striker. Can we have a striker? We've got Kikuchi, he gets three or four. I mean, what did he get this season? You know, he gets two or three goals a season. You know, we've got Kawata. I love Kawata, but Soma doesn't seem to love Kawata. And, you know, he got seven goals this season. We've Tomiyama got eight goals this season. That's actually very good for Tomiyama. But if you look at his record, it's not good. We've got Nakano. I like Nakano, but he only got six goals. You know, we need at least one striker who can get over 10 goals every season. I think Nakano, Kawata don't need to leave. I want them to. In fact, I know Nakano has definitely signed again already. But they need someone with them who's a striker and who can operate as a striker. Otherwise, we've got too many forwards who are number 10 types and who just, you know, who are lovely and nice footballers, nice touch, nice pass and movement. But, you know, they're not going to get you a hat full of goals every season. Not on the current evidence.
Yeah, I think that's fascinating stuff, because when I think about Naoki Soma teams, I do sort of stereotypically think of a, you know, strong and solid defence and perhaps not too much excitement at the top end of the pitch, as you mentioned. And the other thing to mention, perhaps in closing from my point of view, is obviously it feels like the investment in the playing side has been not huge in the last few years from Omiya's kind of front office, and a good striker who can get into double digit goals and is a regular starter, that's the kind of player that would command a transfer fee or some serious wages, I think. So it'd be very interesting to see if somebody does come in on that, you know, on that basis, and perhaps even if it's a non-Japanese player, as we mentioned.
Yeah. I think you're touching on my fears there. I mean, you know, Soma's system, as you say, I don't think I'm going to get the kind of football that I'd like to be watching. It may well be football that keeps us in J2, and perhaps I should be grateful for that. But I don't think it's going to be the football that I want to watch. Yes, I don't think we're attracting the players anymore, and we're not scouting well enough. I mean, it's well known in Japanese football that there's often not a lot of transfers, and you lose a player because their contract has ended and you don't get any fee. So you've got to be able to somehow attract these players. And we've dropped down now into being a regular bottom of the J2 team. We aren't that Omiya that was 10 years ago that was always in J1 finishing 13th. That Omiya has gone. We're not that at the moment. I don't know if we can ever get back to that. And we certainly can't attract, any players. Look who we bought last. You know, we bought in Izumi Sawa. You know, he wasn't wanted anywhere else. You know, we bought in Tomiyama. He wasn't wanted anywhere else. We didn't bring in players that people. We bought in no foreigners. You know, we didn't bring any player in that other clubs wanted. You know, we're scraping around and we're not attracting the quality that we need. And today, I mean, I've talked to you earlier about how well Koshimura did this season in goal, and I had low expectations on his previous experience. Yet today we have announced again, that Minami, at, I don't know, 42, 43 years old, has signed another contract. So, you know, is he going to be the number one keeper now? Is that because he was the number one keeper before?
He hurt himself really badly, didn't he? Just handling like a back pass or something towards the end of last season. I remember he had like some kind of hip. Do you remember he went down and had to go off? And I think it was knee ligaments in the end, but it just looked like a career-ending injury
at the time. It did. But we lost both goalkeepers because then Ueda, you know, only a few weeks later, Ueda, you know, he had a big injury, and both those keepers were out, which is why Shimura got his chance. But now, obviously, we've let Ueda go. We've let Ueda go, and we've re-signed Minami. Now, at this point, we just don't know if he's to be the second, the number two, or the number one. But you know, you don't build, you don't build a team I don't think, around a 43-year-old goalkeeper, as good as he has been and as loyal a citizen as he, as loyal a player he has been to his previously to Yokohama and now to Omiya. I mean, he's played many, many games. But that's not where you build a team around. So I don't know what's going on.
I think even the goalkeeper position can give us a bit of an insight into how Omiya's stock might be kind of sliding in terms of attracting players, because if it were my team, I would be eyeing players like Yuto Shirai, the goalkeeper from Kanazawa. He's already signed a new contract there for next season. And I think Yudai Tanaka, the goalkeeper at Akita, who's been consistently good for you know, two or three years now. I would want to know why Omiya aren't sort of offering them. I'm sure they could offer. This is no disrespect at all intended to Akita or Kanazawa, but I feel like Omiya's wages would be higher. Why aren't they going for a player like that to come in and say, even if it's only as a statement to the fans of like, look, we get it, and here is like a serious guy who's coming in to be the first choice goalkeeper. That's my fear for the striker position. Like, is someone going to come in and they're going to be like, this guy is the first choice striker who's going to play a lot and score goals? I mean, that will cost money.
I mean, we've got a good setup. We've got a nice little stadium. We've got a good little club. You know, And you know, we're close to Tokyo. You know, there's lots of amenities around for the players to live in. It's easy to live in, you know, we've got our history, and we should be able to. We've got Docomo, NTT Docomo on the shirt sponsor. You know, there should be money, and there should be other reasons, not just money, to attract some, you know, some reasonable players in, and build forward.
Yeah, I think we could just sort of, based on that pitch, Steve, I think we could solve the problem just by putting you in charge of player recruitment. I would have signed a multi-year contract on the spot hearing that. Yeah, but I think my gut feeling is next season, like Omiya for me, regardless of all the issues we've addressed in the course of our chat, that is a team that should be top half in J2 minimum, pushing for the playoffs. I think if they can finish 12th, if they can finish 11th, top half in 2022, that would represent a sort of satisfactory progress and a sort of steadying of the ship, wouldn't it? Does that sound?
I agree, and I understand your point, and I know you said that, you and James have said that on the podcast before. You know, they're almost too good to go down. So I don't know where the problem is then. If that's your outside, you know, assessment of it, and you know, the football I'm watching week in, week out is just not good enough to do that clearly. Clearly, they spent all the time in the bottom four or five of the table the whole season. Is it the players? Is it? Well, you're saying it's not the players, and is it the managers? You know, are they the previous managers to blame that they haven't got the most out of these players? Haven't, you know, found the magic formula to get these good players to play together? And the two points added, you know, if you look. The players that have left Omiya recently, or however, I mean, there are a lot of ex-Omiya players in J1. And some of them are doing better than others, you know. I mean, you've got Ian Aga, who's doing very well. You know, a lot of J1 clubs have got on ex-Omiya players on the books. So we have had this quality. And as you say, you even look at this season's squad, and think it should have done better. So big questions there, why? And the fear about that to me, now, we've gone through this period of corona, but this season, this J2 season, happened normally. I mean, there were one or two matches that were cancelled. We even had a match cancelled. I think it was Nagasaki. I don't want to say the team, but you know, a team had corona and an outbreak, and it was cancelled. But basically, this league happened normally, and fans were coming back, and eventually that. Well, you know, a lot of our attendances were way under 8,000. Yeah, we had a lot of games were 4,000 or 5,000 crowds, and that's worrying. What if we had gone down? We were very close. If we had gone down to J3, what would have happened to the crowd then? And I was at the last game of the season at NAC5, and after it was an exciting 3-3 game. Again, our defence is all over. You know, but we can score now. We're playing better going forward. Yeah, so it's 3-3, and. But after the game, you know, the chairman or the owner, whoever he is, came out to do his speech, And the fans didn't boo, but they did play sirens all the way through it. Clearly, the same as booing. You might as well boo. But and then when the manager spoke, then they were silent and sort of polite applause. And, you know, so there is unhappiness there in hardcore. And, you know, is the hardcore decreasing? Are they finding other things to do? Are they going to Urawa not that they're doing that well in J1, but they're in J1. But, you know, what's going on there? That's a worry too. Because we've only got a small stadium, you know. I mean, officially it's 15,000, you know. But so we've got to.
I think it's a big season for Omiya next year, Steve. Based on what we've discussed, and I think I didn't realise that sirens had replaced poo emojis as Omiya fans' favoured form of protest. But that's important information I gleaned from our chat. Steve, if that's everything, I think we can leave. I think you'd probably be glad to leave Omiya there for a while, won't you? Park them for a few months and go on holiday.
I'm still looking forward to the new.
You've got to take it. You've got to go with it. You know, I'll still watch them if the worst comes to the worst, and they go to J3, I'll still be watching. You know, still be following. But good luck to the lads. I mean, get behind the team. And I mean, one thing I will say, I think they all made an effort. It wasn't, I mean, I, you know, you hear people in England sometimes talking, oh, that they're not trying. I don't think that, you know, this team tried, you know, they just, I don't know why. I finished with that. Was it the players? Was it the manager, or was it a mixture of both?
I suspect come sort of Golden Week 2023, we might be finding out the answers to some of these.
Well, let's be positive. Yeah, let's go for it next season, Omiya. Come on.
All right, fantastic. Steve, thanks so much for your time. It's always great to chat. Yes, and with that, I'm going to hand us back to James, and we're going to continue the J2 end of season review. So, yeah, that's all from me and Steve for now, and here comes James.
Well, that was Steve Fryer talking to John about Omiya Ardija. Thank you, Steve, for all of your thoughts on Omiya. It's very interesting to hear from you about quite an eventful season at NAC 5 Stadium. Now, less eventful, perhaps, John, 20th place, Zaspa Kasatsgumma, with 42 points, 5 clear of relegation. What, is there anything to say about Gumma?
Well, I think we should give them their due. For a while, it looked as though they might be heading back down, didn't it, to J3, and they managed to survive. I think for Gunma, every season starts with the goal of avoiding relegation. So if they manage to stay up, that means they've had a successful season. So I suppose congratulations are in order, and it wasn't a guarantee, was it, even going into the kind of final month or so. They were in a very precarious position, but they won two of their last four matches, including that 5-1 battering of Iwate in the last home game to survive. So I think we should tip our hats to them and say well done for staying up. I think something you mentioned just before we pressed the record button was, yeah, the season was very similar to last year, right? In 2021, they picked up 41 points and finished 18th. This season, they were a point better off with 42 and finished 20th. So, yeah, perhaps there's not much to say that we didn't say 12 months ago. I think it's worth mentioning that goals, again, were just a huge problem. I think they managed 36, the third worst total in the division. The only teams that scored fewer were Iwate, who were relegated, and we'll talk about in a moment, and Tochigi, who are Tochigi and have a way of kind of scoring, like winning matches with like negative XG almost. Tochigi only got 32 goals in the 42 game season, which is I had to double check that. I was like, I'm sure that can't be right, but anyway, yeah, I think it's probably worth as well just casting one eye on next season. Tsuyoshi Otsuki, he's had his contract renewed as manager, so that the front office must be happy with the job that he's done, or at the very least they're too scared to tell him to clear his desk. And it'll be interesting to see if he can make any improvements. So what we probably should mention is, you know, a small market and a small budget team. And if you look at the way that J3 is kind of what kind of Division J3 is turning into. Gunma are definitely one of these teams who I think are kind of in a kind of sort of limbo between J2 and J3, and it wouldn't surprise you to see you kind of yo-yoing between the two divisions in the future. So I'm not sure what to expect from them next season, and that's perhaps something we should talk about in January or February time anyway. But well done for staying up to them this year, and we'll see what they can do next year. The most exciting thing for me, James, is Masatoshi Kushibiki just seems to be getting bigger and bigger as a goalkeeper, and will Spanx be available in his size for next season is what I'm concerned about most.
He was probably the standout, I think, for them this year, wasn't he? He was really good in the first half of the season, and then in the second half of the year, he had a few costly mistakes.
Mm.
And he ended up, I think, getting rested or dropped once or twice towards the end.
But I
like him as a goalie. I hope he can find Spanx the right size, because I'd like to see him playing well again next year.
Mm. XXL.
Now, last year, as you said, it was pretty similar. In last year's review pods, I said, mission accomplished for Gunma. They avoided relegation. It's exactly the same this year, I think. They were in the bottom three for almost half the year. They actually dropped into the relegation zone a few times. I think they were fortunate that two teams were worse than them. And also, their results against the teams below them were good. They beat Iwate 1-0 away and Ryukyu 1-0 away in consecutive games, I think. They drew 0-0 with Ryukyu at home, and then in match day 41, they thrashed Iwate 5-1, which basically, that condemned Iwate and saved Gunma, didn't it? So when it mattered, they got the results. And that 5-1 win, let's not forget that the previous week, they'd lost 5-1 themselves, and then 3 weeks before, they'd lost 6-1. So...
yeah, how can you say it was boring, James? Come on.
Yeah, until the last few weeks, I didn't say it was boring. I put words in my mouth. I just said that maybe there wasn't much to say. I don't think there is that much to say about most of the year, to be honest. They were outshot in 30 of their 42 games, which is number one in the league. But they were able to hold on to a lead. When they scored first, they won 11 of those games. But they never won when they conceded first. So, apart from those two games where they got thrashed, Kumamoto and Yamaguchi near the end of the season, I think their defence was not that bad.
Mm.
A lot of close games, but like you talked about, goals scored was their problem. They didn't have anyone really to step up and score goals. And perhaps how good they were in terms of creating chances, and it was they didn't have a finisher, or if it was just they didn't attack at all, I don't know, until like match day 41. But I think, for next year, I wouldn't be surprised if it's more of the same, because as we've talked about before, it's hard to know really what the club can do to kind of step up from this. Aiming for survival every year. Like I said, it's a small market, small budget. They've got quite a big name manager. Maybe they'll be able to attract more. What's the word? More exciting young talent out of J3 or out of university or whatever, or maybe get loan players, or maybe to get a few more experienced players of a slightly higher caliber.
Well, I believe Genkyo Mai, his contract is up at Kyoto, and I don't think he's signed for anybody yet. So it could be a triumphant return for the sort of Pillsbury Doughboy, mercurial talent at Shoda Stadium. We'll wait and see.
Yeah, that would be good. Mm. I quite like to see him back in J2. It's quite fun to watch.
Mm.
Yeah. Okay. I think that's enough Gunma for now. So well done to them for staying up. We've got to move into the relegation zone now. 21st place, FC Ryukyu. They were 5 points behind Gunma. And to share his thoughts on their season, James Gallagher at FL Man in Japan.
Greetings all. This is James Gallagher, also known as at FL Man in Japan on Twitter. providing you with the season recap for FC Ryukyu. I will do my best to find some positivity and highlights from the season, but in a season where the team that you support gets relegated, I've got my work cut out for me. Overall, this season represented a lot of missed opportunities. Not only from the board, from managerial decisions, injuries, goals being tough to find at critical parts in the season. This season overall was it wasn't fairly disappointing. It was significantly disappointing. When it took until match day 25 for the club to find its fourth win, I think that says a lot. 8 wins, 13 draws, 21 losses on the season, 41 goals scored, 65 conceded, and 37 points on the season. Not good enough to stay in the J2, simply put. In terms of Ryukyu's most important player on the season, it's hard to find just one. But I would say without Danny Carvajal in goal, I shudder to think what FC Ryukyu would have looked like this season. Carvajal made some incredible saves. 2 injury time penalty stops that preserved 4 points, 1 win, 1 draw. And that's what comes to mind. I think his game management of a defense that lacked a lot of quality was truly important for FC Ryukyu this season. I said earlier in the season that the loss of Tetsuya Chinen, who moved to Urawa in the offseason, was never really addressed. And a team missing a high-quality center back is likely to concede 65 goals in a season. Other players, Yuki Kusano, when in form, was a very important player, but after an injury, really never regained his form. Kuki Kiyotake had moments of real quality and potted a few goals this season as well, but I really think that Carvajal was just one of the true highlights of this season. Shifting gears, much like Hank Hill meeting a man, shaking his hand and finding that his handshake was weak, let's talk about surprise, then disappointment. I think the club made a lot of surprising decisions this year, not least of which was that they started their own cryptocurrency. I have thoughts on that. It was very surprising, but a team that's struggling on the field, to put it lightly, I think priorities may have been mismanaged in the 2022 season for FC Ryukyu, or misaligned may be a better word, but there were a lot of head scratching moments as an FC Ryukyu supporter this season. As mentioned earlier, Yuki Kusano and Katsuya Nakano's form early in the season, they were two players that hadn't featured for FC Ryukyu at all in the 2021 season, both players being on loan to the club, but their early season form and their ability to click on the field was really a positive surprise. Unfortunately, as the season wore on, again, Kusano struggling to return to early season form after injury, I think the club would have been just fine had their form maintained across the 42 matches of the season. Biggest disappointment, unfortunately spoiled for choice thinking about the biggest disappointment for the FC Ryukyu 2022 season. Obviously, the biggest disappointment is they were relegated. But to pick my biggest disappointment on the season, being in the throes of a relegation battle as the season went on, and from match day 33 to match day 39, FC Ryukyu scored as many goals as I did. And when you go seven straight matches while in a relegation battle and scoring zero goals, that was really disappointing and tough to get behind as a supporter. I think another one of the bigger disappointments, as more as a collective, not individually one moment, was how inevitable relegation seemed for this club. The supporters were in full voice, giving their all, giving a high level of passion that was frequently not matched by the players on the field. Not to say that they weren't trying, but a lot of frustrating mistakes. Clumsy penalties conceded, and making just everything they did on the field harder to support. Some of the board decisions, I have to say, were tough disappointments as well. 20 matches into the season before a 4-0 loss, moving on from Tetsuhiro Kina as manager. I think that lack of adjustment and moving on from Kina was a mistake as well. But shifting to some of the highlights of the year, since Ryukyu had many opportunities to win matches and ended up with only 1 point instead of three, I will take that mentality, and instead of giving you just one match that is my best, I'll give you three. Home to Kumamoto. Sorry to J-Talk Extra Time legend Gary Irwin, but for all the teams that FC Ryukyu just couldn't unpack or figure out this season, somehow Kumamoto was one that we could. Not only winning both the home and away fixtures, but the 2-0 win at home was a great match, a shocking result, and showed the quality that the side was capable of. I believe that was match day 29. And then 2 weeks later, match day 31, away to Nagasaki, a 3-2 win with, as mentioned earlier, a Danny Carvajal penalty stop in injury time, come from behind victory for FC Ryukyu. Just a whirlwind match. And then on a personal note, a few weeks later, shout out to additional J-Talk Extra Time host / legend James Taylor. I traveled away to the Kanazawa match and got to meet James briefly, which was fantastic. But the 2-1 win for Ryukyu in Kanazawa to keep hope alive for at least one more week at the time. But that was a fantastic match. My girlfriend and I got completely soaked in the Kanazawa rain. But it was the fifth match off the island that I've attended to support FC Ryukyu, and it was the first win that I witnessed. as an away supporter. So that was a lot of fun. Shifting into managers, never a good sign when you have more than one manager on the season. Tetsuhiro Kina started this season off, and in 17 matches, won two of them. Two wins, five draws, 10 losses for 11 points, and missed a couple matches due to COVID, and was dismissed in, I believe it was match day 20. Caretaker manager came in for a few matches, followed by the hiring of Nacho Fernandez. And Nacho Fernandez was a manager, I believe he came from Sevilla, in their academy. And the team played different under him, played with a lot more structure, a lot more passion. And the results showed, despite that seven-match goal drought, in 20 matches at the helm, five wins, seven draws, eight losses for 22 points. So, you know, a few more matches, only a few more matches than Kina, but Nacho was responsible for double the points, again, despite a few matches, few more matches at the helm. But the team, unfortunately, I think the team fell back into old habits as the season went on, as situations got more and more dire, and that they lost some of the structure and concepts that Nacho instructed them in. Because when they did stick to his game plans, less play out of the back, but more direct balls forward. And I think Ryukyu really could have benefited more this season from more just route one football. Just send it up the middle, rip the ball on net, and see what happens. And I think he had them playing more, not only more direct football, but I think more to the capabilities of the players on the team. And that was something nice to see, although it collectively ended in relegation, and he will not be returning next season. A brief time with the Spanish manager at the helm, but he was definitely responsible for some higher quality football than what we saw from Kina last season. And so what does next season look like? Well, the goal is a J2 return. But I'm not sure that I see it. I'd love to be wrong. Nothing would make me happier. But as mentioned earlier, some puzzling, to say the least, moves from the board, not least of which included a couple weeks ago rehiring Tetsuhiro Kina to be an advisor to the academy and what I believe is the strength and conditioning department. And I think anybody that observed this season would have to say Kina bears a fair weight of responsibility for why FC Ryukyu was relegated. And to rehire him in any capacity only 5 months after a club, after he was dismissed and after a club is relegated, I'm not sure how many clubs around the world could come to that same conclusion. Now, Kina was born in Okinawa, and that obviously carries a lot of weight with the board and the supporters here in Okinawa. But I think it leaves a lot of questions, and I think about it from a more global perspective, and I don't know how many other clubs out there are coming to that same conclusion. So hopes for next season, again, a return to the J2, and playing with more passion. That, again, I think Nacho brought some of that passion, but having some fun out there. Obviously, in a relegation battle, a team's not going to look like they're having fun, but you do your best work when you're having fun. And I think professionals truly play their best football when they're having fun. And so I hope to see, the Bengara players really start to play with fun and passion again. And then finally, as not only for FC Ryukyu, but for all listeners of J-Talk Extra Time, I hope for the 2023 season that we're all able to take in some matches and enjoy good times with friends, good times with fellow supporters, and watch some high-quality football next year. So that's it for me. Enjoy the rest of your 2022. Have a very happy holidays and a very happy new year. Thanks.
Well, that was James Gallagher at FL Man in Japan to talk about FC Ryukyu's season. James, thank you very much, and also sorry for making you go through that again. It's done now. Let's move on. Let's move on, John, to the bottom team. Iwate Gruja Morioka only came up for one season, only managed 34 points, 9 wins, 7 draws, 26 losses. They only scored 35 goals. They conceded 80. What went wrong? Well, I think I just answered it, but what else went wrong?
It is hard to look past that that goals against column, isn't it, when discussing Iwate's maiden J2 season, and you wonder when, if ever, they'll be back. Perhaps you never know, but seems like it might be a while. I think you've hit the salient points already, James. They were relegated in last place with just 34 points from the 42 matches, 9 wins, 7 draws, 26 defeats. Not particularly great record. Things did seem to be going well at the start of the season, though, didn't they? Because obviously they started, I think, with 4 away games in a row because of the weather. Up north in Japan, quite a lot of the northern teams have a run of away games to start the season because their kind of pitches and stadiums are not ready because it's too cold, too snowy. But in those 4 away games, they actually picked up 2 wins. Right, they won away at Chiba on the opening day, and then they won what sort of felt like it might be end up being a relegation 6-pointer away at Ryukyu as well. But it's not hard to pinpoint the main issue, as you mentioned. 80 goals conceded and a goal difference of minus 45. Well, you're always going to be at the wrong end of the table with statistics like that, aren't you? And I think I never felt very happy with their sort of 3 centre-back system when the 3 centre-backs were Kentaro Kai, Ise Tone, and Yusuke Muta. I think that's a back 3 that is straight out of J3 with the best will in the world. I think that really showed. And they stuck to in the main with the very, very young goalkeeper on loan from FC Tokyo, right, Brandon Taishi Nozawa. I think it would be fair to say that he was a bit hit and miss. He was capable of some outstanding saves in 1 minute, and then having the ball sort of seem to go straight through him the next. Mm-hmm. So I think defensively, it just was not pretty at any point, really. And they also had this kind of rotating gallery of attackers, a bit like the kind of 1960s Batman series, like a different sort of villain popping up every week. But they didn't really seem to get enough out of any of this kind of rotating cast, right? Brenner, Morilato, Masashi Wada, Cristiano, Kenneth Ottobor, and Paul Bismarck Tabinas, of course, now sacked in disgrace after his drink driving arrest. But they just never seemed to get enough out of any of these players individually or collectively, I don't think. And they'll have to start all over again in a very competitive looking third tier next season. I'm sad to see them go because I think it was kind of refreshing and interesting to have them in the league, and they did knock off a few big names. They weren't always bad to watch, I don't think, and it was a soccer specific stadium, albeit a very small one, not many of those in J2. So I'm sad to see them go down, but I also can't really make any case for them not deserving to be relegated, because as you mentioned, the the unfortunate concession of like two goals per game for the entire season. But James, what have I missed anything? James, what do you think?
No, I don't think you have. I think the manager tried to be clever with his team selection, and they averaged the most changes per match of the whole league. Now, another team that averaged a lot of changes for every match was Niigata, but the difference was that Niigata had a higher caliber of player. And the players that you mentioned, I agree, I think were J3 standard, to be honest. But I think also perhaps making so many changes every game meant that none of the players couldn't settle and couldn't get into a rhythm because they were constantly finding themselves in and out of the lineup. I'm sure that doesn't help. Mm. So I think that lack of consistency probably was a problem. They didn't score enough goals and they got thrashed too many times. They conceded 3 goals or more in 14 matches and they drew one of those and lost the other 13. That draw was against Yamagata, match day 16, which was one of their better results. They beat Jeff on the first day, like you mentioned. And then they also won 3-0 away to Yokohama FC in the middle of the season, which was perhaps their best result.
They won away at Okayama too, didn't they, I think, 1-0.
Oh, yeah. So they had a good start, but then they fell into the bottom four, was it match day 11, and then they never got out. So I think there were times sort of mid-season when we were thinking, oh, maybe they can squeak out and squeak out of relegation zone and stay up just by the skin of their teeth. But I think in hindsight, maybe the writing was on the wall quite early. They were completely outplayed too many times. So when they scored first, they won 8 out of 10. But they didn't score enough, and they didn't score first enough. And then in the crucial match, really crucial match, against a direct relegation rival in Gunma in the penultimate game of the season, they lost 5-1. So they're not helping themselves, are they? I mean, that's just awful, isn't it? And so they go back to J3, hoping to avoid Sagamihara syndrome, I think.
Oof, sounds nasty.
It is nasty, as people who listened to Mike's Short Corner J3 season review pod will know. It is very nasty, Sagamihara syndrome. But yeah, it's a shame to see them go because, yeah, like, it's a nice stadium. A different team come up. Unusual mascot in a country full of unusual mascots. Theirs was perhaps one of the most unusual or memorable. So yeah, a shame. But in terms of the football, fully deserved, I think.
Agreed.
Yeah. All right. So those are the team. We've got one more thing to talk about though, John. We had a question from Akakichino 11. On Twitter, who asked, I'm curious about your positive and negative surprises for the season. For me, clearly Kumamoto and in some sense Gunma with that squad as positives, negatives in Nagasaki for the squad, Ryukyu and somewhat Okayama for the squad. So, John, what are your positive surprises and negative surprises for this season?
Yeah, I think Mr. 11 is on the money with most of these choices. I'll sidestep trying to pronounce the full handle because this is a tricky one. You navigated it very well, James, I have to say. I think obviously Kumamoto, nobody expected that they would end up, you know, getting into the playoffs and doing as well as they did, and also the kind of swashbuckling style that they had was a delight as well. It isn't as if they kind of ground out results week in, week out to get into that top six. They did it in a sort of a very fine style, I think. Okayama are in his sort of negative surprises, I think. But for me, I'd perhaps go the other way and say, you know, for them to get so close to the automatic promotion places would have to go down as... obviously they didn't get promoted in the end. So I suppose if in the cold, hard light of day, that is a failure. But I think based on the sort of history of the club and where they've been in the past, that it's a successful season that gives them a platform to build on. So I think they were a pleasant surprise as well in how close they got to being a J1 team for next season. And on the other hand, I think, Nagasaki never really convinced as even a top six team. did they? And who else was disappointing? I think perhaps Kofu is one where, having finished third the season before, you're not expecting the team to drop 15 places and either be sort of in a relegation battle or just be nondescript. So Kofu would be on my list as well. Ryukyu, I thought, might struggle, but not as badly as they did. So I'd have them in the sort of, if we can have a sort of middle ground of like mild disappointment or mild surprise, I'd have Ryukyu in that category, I think. But the way that club has been run, sort of from the front office point of view, Tetsuhiro Kina being appointed as manager and then being given too long, and I think he's back now, incredibly, he's like director of football or something. Not really sure what is in the what they're smoking over there, but yeah, I think perhaps, yeah, Ryukyu were disappointed, but I wasn't as disappointed with them because I didn't think the squad was that strong, you know, going into the season. Have I missed anybody, James?
My positive surprises, I put Kumamoto, of course, and Akita again, actually. Mm. I think they avoided second season syndrome comfortably, never in danger of relegation, even when they were on that quite long winless run. Mm. They've still kept themselves afloat. I think they picked up some good results from a squad that doesn't have much like a star power, for want of a better phrase. So I would put them down as a positive surprise. Mm. I think with Okayama, I think the way they flopped at the end of the season perhaps would tip them into a negative. But for me, yeah, I think probably a positive overall. Like you said, best ever season for them. And they did get so close to automatic promotion. And then it just fell apart in the last few weeks. Negatives, perhaps not a surprise with Ryukyu. I mean, but it was disappointing the way they the front office just messed up. With keeping Kina on for so long, and Machida as well. We talked about them in the last episode. Mm-hmm. They were a disappointment for me. I was expecting much more from them based on their attacking talent, but they were pretty bad, especially in the later part of the season. And Kofu, of course, were a hugely negative. In fact, I realized that this was the lowest that Kofu have ever finished. I think.
Mm-mm.
So you could put it down as their worst ever league season.
While you've been speaking, James, I'll just mention real quick, I think Tokyo Verdy got a lot closer to the top six than anybody would have expected earlier on this season. I think Hiroshi Jofuku, who is a divisive figure, I think, and I'm perhaps not his biggest fan, but he did really well to kind of get that team to the cusp of the first thing. They only ended up 3 or 4 points off the top six, right? Which is pretty impressive going with that squad. And Yokohama FC, I don't think they blew anybody's socks off with the football they played for the most part, with the handbrake very much kind of on and kind of padlocked on and couldn't be removed even in emergencies. But to get that team straight back up to J1 at the first time Vaskin, not a bad achievement either. So that probably a pleasant surprise for a lot of Yokohama FC supporters, I would suggest.
Yeah, I think that's a good shout as well, actually, yeah. All right. So thanks to Akakichino 11 for the question. That we had to get our thinking caps on for that one. And I think that's pretty much it for the season. So I say thanks again to Matt Bruce, Steve Fryer and James Gallagher for contributing to this episode. And thanks to everyone who's contributed throughout the season as guests or sending us comments or, you know, retweeting and liking and downloading and sharing and just listening. Generally, it's quite nice to know that people appreciate what we do. We appreciate that you appreciate it. John, thanks for your company this season. It's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's been mega. Yeah, I've really enjoyed it, James. And we're not sure what's coming up between now and the sort of season previews for next season, but we'll keep people posted on the socials or on Twitter. So yeah, please stay tuned for that.
Yeah, definitely. All right. And there's more J3 season reviews, I think, coming up from Mike, or there might be one more. He's much more organized than we are, so he'd probably have his done before this is done. But yeah, all right. Thanks, everyone. And thanks to everyone who has supported us on Patreon throughout the year. We're very grateful for that support. And of course, thanks to Ben and Sam at Big Pod for giving us the platform to talk about J2 and J3 every week. Just because it's a lot of fun, and we hope that you've enjoyed it as well. So that's it from us for this season, and we'll see you next year. Bye for now.